This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, the editor of WorldSweeper.com and the director of the World Sweeping Association. I'm pleased today to have Bruce Christensen on the line with me. Bruce is the manager of the Wahpeton, North Dakota, which is about 50 miles south of Fargo, based company ProSweep Incorporated. And Bruce is an interesting interview today because he was the owner of the company he founded in 2000, but in 2010 sold it but remained there as manager. And Bruce and I have known each other for a long time, and I'm very glad to have him as the featured contractor for February 2016. So welcome aboard, Bruce, and if you would, talk about how you got into the business and maybe why, and we'll take it from there.
Good morning from North Dakota.
Yes, and where it's, what degrees at here in January when we're making the interview?
Yeah, quite a range of temperature. Monday last week was 18 to 21 below, and today we're headed to 25 above. So it's but then it's still lovely at night when it's 8 below, so it's really quite a contrast from Florida's and California's.
That's for sure. Well, how'd you get into this this business of power sweeping?
Right. I started the company in 2000 on a, you might say, a whim. I was parked in a parking lot, and a big gust of wind and dirt and so forth came across in January, and I wondered if anybody swept. So the next day I went to my local grocery store and asked him if anybody swept in the neighborhood, and he says, no. I said, would you like it swept? He said, sure. How much is it going to cost? I don't know. I'll let you know. So the next day I did some research, probably through your sites, and found some prices. And the day after that, told him I could handle the project. So there we started, February 1 of 2000. And we've continued on growing and expanding.
What did you start with? What kind of machine? Did you go out and get a machine or?
Right. Bought a used Tenet and a little dump truck, and we did parking lots. Started with one, and someone else seen us come over and do ours, and then it just kind of grew, and then ended up going out of town 25 miles to another store, and then all of a sudden we're 50 miles away, and just continued with that until the first or second year it was time to grow and get a little bigger, a little better equipment. Because, you know, in March, it's still not warm out in the mornings or late nights.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went with the Timco 435s and been with them ever since.
Well, I would think that up there you'd have such a snow event season that do you have to use loaders and that kind of thing to do your spring cleanup? Or what do you do? I assume there's part of the year that maybe you can't operate, and then you've got to handle the salt and cinders, or what do they put down up there to keep
it? Used to be heavy concentrations of sand and salt, and now a lot of the retailers, of course, have gone away from that, and it's using strictly a brine. So we don't have a lot of cleanup except for where the snow piles are. Then we have a lot of boxes and debris that get pushed up through the snow. And we do not do any snow plowing. Currently, there's three or four gentlemen in the shop repairing equipment, and the night guys are on standby to go out if and when weather gets above zero.
Right. Have you experimented with anything that allows you to sweep below zero or above? Well, you say above zero, so not above freezing. You must have something that keeps you putting your water to allow you to continue to sweep and use dust suppression, or do you just get rid of dust suppression? What do you do there?
Right now, there's such a brine on the parking lots. We don't really have any dust because it's traffic's tracking in gravel and dirt, and then we kind of sweep up trash. And right now, currently, there is no dust, of course. But you know, when it gets close to freezing, then we'll put water in the hopper and go dry for a while. And then as time progresses, of course, then we use water all the time at nights.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes makes perfect sense. And you said you ended up with a market area that extended out to 50 miles, and I assume that 50 miles is Fargo. Is
right.
That a major place for you to sweep these days?
No, that's one of the locations. Now, we have three divisions that I call the nighttime parking lot gentlemen, the daytime city crew, and the construction crew. So the nighttime parking lots will reach out 250 miles one way if we have to. We're about 15 cities at night. Every night we're in different locations doing lots.
Mm-hmm.
And the municipal sweepers, we're in that 30 to 40 cities we take care of on a regular basis. And in two states, North Dakota and Minnesota DOT, along with numerous counties in those states we service.
And that's all done primarily with Timco 435s or exclusive with 435s?
Yeah, we only run 435s for the parking lots, and then some Elgin Eagles for pickup brooms. And
there we go.
Superior brooms for the sweep-offs or rock sweep-offs we may do on highways.
Mm-hmm. Or construction, that kind of thing.
Right. Construction is one of the things where we have a lot of track out sweeps where we, you know, in 2000, nobody cared about it. And now, of course, in we've seen a big push in construction track outs since probably 2010, where the cities and the stormwater runoff is getting more and more. And we're called, you know, on a regular basis, regular route type system to take care of some of those issues.
Well, I would think that it's certainly a different prospect up there than it is, you know, down here. Well, I say down here, I'm not in Washington State, but in other areas where it's, you know, not such a severe winter. Do you do parking lot sweeping as far away as 50 miles in Fargo and your other locations, or is that you just run up there and do the street sweeping and come back?
We have central locations here in Wahpeton, so we'll fleet out of here, say at like 8 p.m. at night for the parking lots, and they'll do like a route. They may go, you know, 100 and some miles south and then west and east and make a big loop. So we're covering all those cities at night. We have another location where we're going farther north towards the Canadian border to service some of those lots. And everybody tries to come back here in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the machines, for instance, we'll put on 50,000 miles a year on one of the nighttime machines, and the rest are about 35,000 miles a year in an eight-month season.
Well, that is quite a bit. And does that implies that you tend to probably re-overhaul your chassis equipment frequently and keep the same sweeper on the chassis as long as you can?
As long as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you swap to different chassis since they get more use than the sweepers do?
You know, we're pretty fortunate that we're able to run some of our chassis. We have one, you know, 2007 with a quarter of a million miles on it. And some of the newer ones, the 14s, are, you know, at 100,000 miles already. So hopefully they'll continue on, and we'll have good luck with them.
And I don't recall if 435s are stainless hoppers. Are they? And is that something that you care about?
We do not use a stainless hopper. We're just the mild steel. And, you know, I have a 2007. And one of our things here is make sure that a clean sweeper is a happy sweeper. So these machines will get washed every day and hoppers washed out every morning. And they're clean so they can go out and perform as they should each and every night.
That's really a key, I think, to for everybody listening out here, is to keep your equipment clean. And I've been impressed with several contractors that I'm aware that also have the luxury of space where they park their machines in exactly the same spots every day, and that way they can see if something's losing oil or fluids, hydraulics or something like that, and kind of keep track on them that way. And certainly keeping your equipment in top shape and keeping it clean is the key, especially when you're doing so many miles, because if you have a breakdown and you're that many miles away from your home base, that's got to be a difficult proposition. What do you do when that happens? Do you send mechanics to the sweeper, or, I mean, are you prepared to do that, or limp back to the shop, or what kind of system do you have set up for that?
You know, that's one thing why we're very proud of our maintenance program. We do certainly break down, but when we're that far away from home. If something does happen, the crew will call me. We'll, if it's completely broke down, we'll, we certainly have a good rapport with the tow truck operators who will take it back to Wahpeton here. But I, you know, on a, last year I can count on my hand probably five times where we've had to take care of 10 units on a tow truck, so very little breakdowns.
Yeah, that is. I could see where, you know, having a top shelf mechanic team and also a real well-planned out maintenance program would really pay benefits there. You know, I talked to a contractor in a Midwest state just yesterday about his situation, and there are very few contractors where he is. He's, and as an example, he's getting $125 to sweep a Walmart. So that tells you there's some kind of supply and demand situation going on. Plus, he's having to run a bit for that. But he was contacted by the manager of that store he sweeps to see if he would drive an hour and 45 minutes to sweep another Walmart and what that would cost. Now, I mostly can have the answers to so many years of working with this, but I didn't really know what to say in terms of how to charge for his transit time for that long of a time. As a rule of thumb, I talk about trying to get a dollar a minute for parking lot sweeping, and I'm interested in your idea of, you know, whether that's valid or not too. But how about running that far? How do you decide, you know, what you can, what a client should be charged when you've got an operator and a parking lot sweeper traveling that kind of distance?
You know, we hear this all the time from managers that are farther away than just the local area, because North Dakota, Minnesota is much different than Arizona, where you might have a box store on each and every corner and you can get 10 or 12 done in a night, where we're getting on an average about four a night with that travel. So
yeah,
the managers do know that we charge, as a trucking company would, the same type of rate to go per mile, do their lot, and come back. Because one, the machine should be working, but it's just driving. And two, when it gets there, it does its lot, and it goes back and maybe 150 miles away finds another lot.
See.
Because cities are so spread out.
Yeah.
But yes, to your answer would be, if you're from point A to point B and it's 100 miles, we're, I'm going to look at more than a dollar a mile to get there for mobilization, do the lot, and, you know, go back. But most of it's on a regular basis, and they have that budgeted in.
Sure. Well, and for those listening, too, my advice to him was to go. I mean, his initial reaction was, heck no, I'm not going out. I'm not going that far. But he's in a limited market area, and it's really makes talking to you, it brings home the fact that there are a number of contractors, no doubt, out there in limited market areas where you have to travel, and what you do is you just have to figure out, you know, the best way to do that. One of the things I told him was to go there and handle it for his client. Estimate may be high and say it might be as much as this, but I'm going to keep track of all my time and my expenses, and I'll rebate you some money if that's how it turns out, you know, for this first time. And to go there and assess the situation and also assess the surrounding area and see if there looks like there are other accounts that he might be able to pick up, maybe talk to a few other people and see whether it looks like you could get more business there. And then ultimately, in a situation like that where it's a single place that far from his location, maybe pick up something that could do the job, whether it's a low-cost used air sweeper or something like a tow-behind that you could place in that town with somebody who would be doing the work. And then try to work to expand his route out, that route out there, and keep that sweeper a little more busy, too. You never want to turn down what's a prospect for some more work, because you never know how your business is going to grow, in a sense.
That's exactly right. I use a scenario. If you pull up to McDonald's and you want to buy something off the dollar menu, they never say, oh, no, sir, you can't have that. It's the same in sweeping. We can go 200 miles, and we're going to give you an NTE price, not to exceed X amount. And if it works, it's fine. If it doesn't work, I'll tell you. And it's that's why we've expanded as we have, just to keep everybody everybody's parking lot clean.
How many sweepers do you operate, parking lot and roadway?
Currently in 16, we'll run four Timco 435s. We'll run three Elgin Eagles and a Tenant sweeper scrubber for underground market. And then our Superior style brooms, just one or two of those, and we rent a couple as we need them.
And there's a rental agency there, or that's from the dealer, or how does that work?
There's a dealer network for the Superior brooms in North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota. We'll use them for rentals.
Why did you decide on the Timco 435s, which are basically a street sweeper configuration rather than something else?
You know what, really the main reason is we got started, and there's an excellent dealer in Minneapolis, very knowledgeable, Al Walford from Environmental Equipment, very dedicated to the sweeper industry. We demoed one and just said, this is it. Where we struggle in North Dakota, Minnesota market is the heavy use of the gravel in the spring, the North Dakota Red River Valley clay gumbo that may fall off people's vehicles and lots is very sticky, does an excellent job of that, and we can utilize that machine 24 hours a day during the leaf sweeps we do in our cities, so it's a win-win for us. The machines, we never seem to have a problem or an issue with the sweeper part, and we're very happy with that. It's very a solid machine for us here in the North Country.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that about the sweeper part, because in the last year, I think I've heard from all the manufacturers. Of course, you know, I work with all of them as editor of World Sweeper. At some point or another, everyone has said something like, yeah, I am so tired of having a customer call me up and say, I'm never going to buy a blasted da-da-da, you know, brand name sweeper again, because the transmissions keep going out. And, of course, the transmission has nothing to do with the sweeper or, you know, or whatever the component is. In most of the cases these days, of course, it's Tier 4 engines that are problems.
It's the chassis, and I think everybody knows that Timco, we have our on Isuzu chassis and international chassis. We run some of those on internationals, and we've struggled with some of the new sensors that are in these motors that will shut you down and wish you had a push broom again or a gas motor, but this is what they're able to provide us. So until International or whoever gets their bugs worked out of them, we'll have to push forward with what we can.
Well, I think that you probably are not having as much trouble as some people because you're running with your machines, and the diesel engine configurations seem to not be really set up for, unfortunately, for machines that are going slowly.
I think you're exactly right. With the miles we're able to put on, our motors do warm up more and burn some of that out. You know, if we manually have to stop along the road and regen, which happens like once a year for us, that's a half an hour wasted along the road. And we really do not have that issue because they're regenning automatically as we go down the road in such long distances.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. How about employees? In a limited market area like that, do you have trouble getting good employees, especially on your machines where you need certified drivers?
We have a great group of employees now. You know, there's a 12-year veterans, there's two of them, some 10s, some 5s, so dedicated nighttime employees. You know, we certainly have one or two we lose over the course of a year, but currently we have no openings right now, so that's a good thing.
Well, that's always a good thing. Do you have any keys to that success you can share?
Well, I think it's good to have a family style operation. We have very strong safety seminars to keep everybody in line. I have to say we're awful proud that in the last 4 years our OSHA 300A work-related injuries and illnesses have been zeros throughout the last 4 years. For instance, last year, the employees put in a little over 15,000 hours with zero industry-ish injuries. Being members of NAPSA and sites like yours where we can show them what's going on in the other industry areas, safety manuals, safety meetings, mandatory safety vest wearing at night and during the day, no matter what you're doing, tailgate pizza parties, coffee and donuts. I mean, it's just simple things to very extravagant things that keep everybody coming back, along with, you know, pay matters. So we try to be a little above North Dakota, Minnesota averages, which I think helps.
There's no doubt that sort of thing helps. And, you know, having your safety meetings teaches, people would say, well, you know, that's how they learn the safety techniques and so forth. But I think it's more to it than that. As you say, it's a family style, and you're saying just like you would to your sons and daughters when you talk to them about wearing their seatbelts and not distracted driving and so forth, you're showing them that you care about them as people, you're caring about their families, and you're getting to know them and getting to know each other to where, you know, the employees have a camaraderie. Right now, I'm sure that nobody wants to be the one to break that 3-year string, you know, for one. And, you know, that sort of thing, I think, really is another aspect of having a strong safety program, is everybody gets together, they share stories in from the inside, they share stories from the outside, and you know, talk about these different things. With your interview coming up, I saw a video the other day that John Miola, our safety advisor for the World Sweeping Association, sent us with, which was ice coming off a truck along the highway, and they hadn't cleaned the ice off the top of their vehicle, and it came down through the windshield of another, you know, following vehicle, and it's catastrophic. You don't think of, you know, think of snow and ice as this nice fluffy stuff, but boy, it cannot be, and things like that, you know, graphic videos are sometimes tough to watch, but it certainly serves as a reminder that you don't want that to be you in any fashion whatsoever.
It's amazing you said John's safety seminars. We started to use those in December and January. Now we'll use it again in February because it's something that we don't care about. Like, all of his safety seminars are geared towards sweepers. That's our job. That's our how we make a living. So we really like to use John's seminars for safeties. It makes a lot of sense to just have a good, safe crew out there, whether you're working at night alone or with another crew member in the dark, or you're working on a busy highway with traffic going by. So it's just good to be safe.
Well, I videoed John Miola's National Pavement Exposition presentation last year, which is an hour and a half, and I wondered, and we're allowed to do that for exclusive viewing by the World Sweeping Association members and by NPE, which is very nice that they allow us to do that. And I wondered when I did that, here's an hour and a half video, is anybody going to actually watch this? And I had several members that have said that's the best safety information that they've ever had, and thanked me so much for taking the time to video, which we're actually videoing his 2016 presentation, which is occurring next week as well. It's fine to see these kind of broad-based safety information, but it sure makes more sense when you can relate it to the machine and situation that you're actually in. It just, like you say, it's just so much better. Well, let's change topics here a little bit. You started the company in 2000, and you decided to sell your interest in it, or at least most of your interest in it, in 2010, and stay on as a manager. How has that changed your job description, or, you know, what around that might you have to offer to other people who may be considering the same kind of thing? And I know when you change owners of something, it certainly tends and historically to be a lot better if you can keep the management team intact and on board, and this would be a great way to do that, I would think. What's been your experience there, Bruce?
It was kind of a difficult task for me and my wife and family as we tossed that idea around when the offer approached us. We had no thoughts of selling. We wanted to grow and continue to. And, you know, it just makes good sense to bring in some more people that are more contacts, more knowledgeable in the business side, and more ideas. We've had a great relationship now, and it just really, really melts together if you can find the right buyer, I guess you could say.
And are they hands-off completely, or are they part of your organization as well?
Well, same thing, we talk about meetings. So we have a meeting every other week, usually on a Tuesday, just to go over things, budgets and machinery and equipment and employees and thoughts and ideas. So we bounce stuff around in our meetings. And it has really helped to have not only one set of eyes on books and the business plan, but another set. And other than that, really hands-off. It's been really a neat, interesting thing for me to continue on as operations manager.
Well, it sounds like that would certainly be the way to do it, to keep everybody apprised of what's going on. And if that works, then that works. What other kinds of things should we talk about, the differences up there? I know that you also do some side operations besides sweeping. You do striping, you do power washing and seal coating and those kinds of things. That must be a frantic summer cram it all in activity there in North Dakota, where the weather's, can get you any time of year.
We're networking with some real good seal coaters where we're able to sweep ahead of some of them, and they can continue on. Same with our stripers. If we have to run a machine into a parking lot and get the job done before they stripe, the base of the whole program is, to keep the owners of the properties happy with the outside looks of their ground, so they can hopefully keep the inside clean, keep the tracking out. But on the bigger picture, I guess the cities and municipalities, when we're able to go in and help a smaller town of, say, under 1,000 people that certainly cannot afford a $250,000 sweeper, that we can do their city and give them a good budget, come in 2 to 3 times a season, a spring cleanup, and maybe a summer festival, mid-July sweep, and then, of course, the fall leaf pickup. It's kind of the culmination of the season. And now we've expanded in the last few years to underground, under parking, warehouse sweeping and scrubbing, which, certainly never thought about that until we were asked to come look at a project for underground, and certainly couldn't get the Timcos inside, and was certainly too big for a broom and a dustpan. So we've started that, and that's really grown because of the amount of large warehouse space, agricultural, commercial, and also underground parking with vehicles during the day. So that's taken off in the last few years.
Well, it's sure good business to help to expand your business out however you can see to expand it, and in places where you can do a good job. But that's the same kind of management oversight and diligence by workers that is called for outside on a parking lot is the same as inside. And I know that there are a lot of savvy contractors actually that use the OSHA classification of janitorial as for their parking lot sweeping efforts, and that's a good classification that you can actually justify, because you're outside janitorial, you're doing many of the same things that inside janitorial are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly can't handle it as and a lot of times the other alternative is street sweeping, where that classification is higher expense because you're out there on a street, on a road with lots of other traffic and so forth, and so you're closer with janitorial on a parking lot, where there's not a lot of other vehicles and cars, and in the middle of the night and on private property and so forth. So it seems like a real good direction to travel, I would think. How hard were you hit by the economy when it all came down nationally in 2008? Was that something that it swept across North Dakota equally, where construction went down, cities stopped sweeping, or were you, in a sense, somewhat insulated from that since you were doing enough city sweeping? And, you know, did they keep going, or what happened there?
You know, we were impacted as everything else because, you know, what are you going to cut out of your budget first? And usually it's, unfortunately, outside parking lot sweeping. The municipality sweepings, we didn't really lose any. We had issues with the federal highway construction bill funding, which slowed down a lot of the construction projects. But the Fargo market and north with the, since 08 with the oil boom in the western part of the state has spurred on the economic growth with building and housing. And we're fortunate that we're in the market where growth has been good. We're kind of steady now since then with the amount of work we can put on. So we are looking for growth now in 16 as we're looking at a good economic base. However, we also are in a very agricultural market with the agriculture money's not out there like they were in the past years with corn at $3 a bushel, which it's amazing that a sweeping contractor would worry about corn prices, but if the farmer isn't buying a new Case IH tractor or loader that's made in Fargo, North Dakota, that affects us. If the dealers aren't selling new pickups, that affects our sweeping in these parking lots. If they're not going to the hardware store and buying bolts and nuts and whatever else, the service stations may not use us. But currently, I think we'll be okay for the next upcoming 16 season. Is we've got a strong base of box stores and cities and construction contractors that need our services, whether that's good or bad, it seems like. So it's not that we're insulated, it's just we have come into niches of the market here where we don't want every parking lot or every city, but we certainly work for good ones.
That is excellent advice, and some that I think I encourage everybody out there listening to take to heart, because as I've said in other interviews, I was impacted by a sign I saw early on which said the best way to go out of business is to get all the low bids, and that's certainly the case. You need to review your accounts at least annually and fire the bottom tier of clients if you're not making money with those clients, or raise them to the rates they need to be so that you can make a normal profit. It doesn't make sense to have loss leaders on your account rolls, that's for sure. Is there anything else we should talk about? We've covered really a lot of area here. Is there anything else different in the North Dakota market that you'd like to bring out, or different about how you operate, or as somebody with going on 16 years of experience, any other advice, tidbits that you have to offer to contractors out there?
Well, I think I have to pat you on the back for having the insight for worldsweeper.com stuff and being part of the association. It's amazing how I didn't care the first few years, and then you need to broaden your brain a little bit more, so then you seek out others with expertise, and then you join other chambers, and you go to business after hours, and you start a network of people. And then it used to be I would have to make all the phone calls and contacts. Well, it took about 9 years before my phone actually rang off the hook and people asked me to service their property. But then that's all from the networking of NAPSA and World Sweeper and getting on a website and shaking hands and making phone calls. Business cards, all that stuff is very important. So don't lose sight of that you have to be out and selling yourself each and every day. Have your vehicles tagged up with all the neatest decals you can. Wear a business shirt with your name on or your company logo on it. Have employees that represent you well when they go up. Maybe they go up to the local restaurant. They should be courteous and kind to everybody when they're there, because someone's going to say, who do they work for? You don't want the negativity there. And just go out in the community and do the best you can, because I think then your business will strive. And for that, we're grateful that we've been in business. This is the 16th season. We'll continue on as long as we can.
Well, I think that's a wonderful place to leave our interview, and I sure thank you for your time and inclination to share some of your success story with the power sweeping community of the United States, and I guess around the world, with the reach now of World Sweeper and World Sweeping Association. We've been speaking with Bruce Christensen, and he is the manager and former owner of Pro Sweep Incorporated. They're located in Wahpeton, North Dakota, and Pro Sweep Incorporated is the featured contractor for World Sweeping Association and World Sweeper for February 2016. Thanks again, Bruce.
Thanks for the chance to talk with you, Ranger.